Blog Talk Radio.
Customer Joey Mustaine posted a photo of the two men on Facebook
with this account. The Mustanger, all I could pick up on the conversation was the manager saying that he'd love to give him a full, warm meal, not just scraps or extras. And the only thing he required was that the man let him pray with him. As busy as they were, the manager stopped then and there, laid his hand on the man, and proceeded to pray. I heard the love in that prayer. Tens of thousands of people are sharing this story online and praising it in comments on Facebook. The post has been shared nearly 100,000 times in the last 24 hours. How about that? Mustang continued to write, the homeless man wasn't some untouchable stain on business. He was just the reason that the store opened its doors that morning, or any morning for that matter, at a time when companies are trying to win in the market by neutralizing any possible ability of offense. CFA is Chick-fil-A is thriving because they unwaveringly cling to their principles and purpose. We reached out to Chick-fil-A, commented with the update, and they were whoever made this report. We'll hear back from them. And it's the report is by Business Insider by Haley Peterson, and it's 6 hours old, so really, it's something to look at. Now, let me tell you what I think about that. When I worked in food service in the past, or more or less I should say when other people worked in food service of that I saw, they were not allowed to give food that they were throwing away to the homeless. They considered that if they couldn't sell it and make money off of it, well, then nobody could have it. And their philosophy was, if these homeless people are coming in all the time hoping for free food, that they would cut into the business's profits. And that would be true to a certain degree, but my thing is this. If it's going to be thrown in the garbage and it's still good for anybody to consume, I say give it to the homeless. No doubt about that. Now, we're going to scroll on down, and we're going to talk about the aftermath of this East Coast snowstorm that wreaked havoc on the cities of New York City, rather, I should say all up and down the East Coast, because resident surfaces from their snow-covered homes on Sunday after the East Coast blizzard lived up to it and even exceeded the hype leading up to it. Now, people were just preparing for this storm left and right, and they were buying out snow shovels, buying out supplies, buying out gasoline to stay warm, you know. And sadly, the infant and the mother passed away in the car while trying to stay warm during that snowstorm. A research team has an unsettling explanation for why we haven't found aliens. Let's talk about it. Sponsored by Business Insider in the Science category, a research team has an unsettling explanation for why we haven't found aliens, because in 1950, physicist Enrico Fermi raised a very important question about the universe and the existence of extraterrestrial life. But given the size and the age of the universe, he said, and the statistically probability of life emerging in other solar systems, why is it that humanity has not seen any indications of intelligent life in the cosmos? But in this query, known as the Fermi paradox, continues to haunt us to this day. If there are indeed billions of star systems in our galaxy, and the conditions needed for life are not so rare, where are all the aliens? Good question. According to a recent paper by the researchers of the Australian National University Research School of Earth Sciences, the answer may be simple. They are all dead. In what research teams called the, well, giant bottleneck, the solution to this paradox, may be that life is so fragile that most of it simply doesn't make it. But to put this in perspective, let's first consider some of the numbers. As of the writing of this article, scientists have discovered 2,049 planets in 2,049 planets and 1,297 planetary systems, including 507 with multiple planets. But in addition, a report in 2013 by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the USA indicated that, based on Kepler mission data, there could be as many as 40 billion Earth-sized planets orbiting in the habitable zones of the Sun, like stars and red dwarfs within the Milky Way, and that 11 billion of these may be orbiting like stars. Well, how about that? But I'll tell you what I think about that. I believe we are not the only ones here. I believe that if life exists here, why wouldn't it exist anywhere else? It's a thing to stop and think of, even though it baffles the mind. It baffles your mind too much to disturbances in the mind regarding your mental state, like me, maybe it's just best not to think about it at all. Why, certainly there. But now we're talking about other things rather than just that. Tennessee teen dies after drinking racing fuel. And friends and family are remembering a teenager who died after he reportedly drank racing fuel. How stupid. How dumb. Why? That's just unbelievable. Why? All right, we're going to check the time here on BTR and see just how much time we have burned. And we're down to 18 minutes left remaining in the show. We're going to take a silent break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about today's news and hot topics here on Open Topic with Jory Rowe. Welcome back to Open Topic with Jory. And we are getting our news sources and information tonight off of Yahoo. Very good website to go to. It's become a big thing and practically a necessity and positive component of life. Even though Yahoo is not, I don't think personally, they're the way they used to be. But they're more in depth now. I remember Yahoo InfoSpace, back when the internet was just first popular. So, meanwhile, let's go to this. If you get on Yahoo.com, you'll notice there's an article called The 19 Terrifying Bridges to Turn Your Stomach. It says, don't look down for those who don't cope well with heights. These are incredible photos that will show you some of the most terrifying bridges in the world. Let's check them out. Now, they're talking about the world's scariest bridges. Don't look down. The Royal Gorge Bridge in the USA will definitely turn your stomach when you walk, go across that. It looks like somewhat of a Golden Gate footbridge there. But now, if you Google that or use Yahoo, whatever search engine you choose, check out the Royal Gorge Bridge in the United States. The second most scariest bridge in the United States is the Mackinac Bridge. And, you know, I've had very weird dreams about bridges. I've had weird dreams like, you know, walking straight up a bridge, like a drawbridge. I guess it's kind of a normal thing to think of. I'm just sitting here screwing around on the internet here for a minute trying to get back to where, okay, there we go. Now we're back with where we're at. I tend not to talk about politics because politics is something I cannot wrap my mind around. And it's just something I can't even initiate a conversation with. But however, if I study things like space travel, such as how long would it take to travel to the nearest star? As in the universe today, let's check check that one out, because we're going to talk about this. How long would it take to get to the nearest star? Basically, how much fuel would it take in it? What kind of spacecraft would you think it'd take? This will all be a good article from Universe Today, Space and Astronomy News. How long would it take to get to the nearest star? Well, let's find out. We all have asked this question at some point in our lives. How long would it take to travel to the stars? Could it be within a person's own lifetime? And could this kind of travel become the norm someday? There are many possibility answers to this question. Some are very simple. Others in the realms of science fiction. But coming up with a comprehensive answer means taking a lot of things into consideration. Unfortunately, any realistic assessment is likely to produce answers that would totally discourage futurists and enthusiasts of interstellar travel. Like it or not, space is very large and our technology is still very limited. But should we contemplate leaving the nest, we will have a range of options for getting to the nearest solar systems in our galaxy. The nearest star to Earth is our sun, which is a fairly average star in the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram's main sequence. This means that it is highly stable, providing Earth with just the right type of sunlight for life to evolve on our planet. We know that there are planets orbiting other stars dear to our solar system, and many of these stars are similar to our own. In the future, should mankind wish to leave the solar system, we'll have a huge choice of stars we could travel to. Many could have the right conditions for life to thrive. But where would we go and how long would it take us to get there? Just remember, this is all speculative and there is currently no benchmark for interstellar trips. But that being said, here we go. Now, if you stop and think of the nearest star, as already noted, the closest star to our solar system in the Proxima Centauri, which is why it makes the most sense to plot interstellar mission to this system first. Okay, now, I don't know if I said that right. Centauri, yeah, Proxima Centauri. There we go, that's a better way to say that word, okay? Anyway, the Proxima Centauri is about 4.24 light years, or 1.3 parsecs, from Earth. Alpha Centauri is actually the brightest star of the three in the system, part of a closely orbiting binary 4.37 light years from Earth. Whereas Proxima Centauri, the dimmest of the three, is an isolated red dwarf about 0.13 light years from the binary. And while the interstellar travel conjures up all kinds of visions of faster than light travel, FTL, aka, ranging from warp speed and wormholes to jump drives, such theories are highly speculative, such as the, I don't even know if I can pronounce this, Occubure drive, I don't know, or entirely the province of science fiction. In all likelihood, any deep space mission will likely take generations to get there rather than a few days or in an instantaneous flash. So, starting with one of the slowest forms of space travel, how long would it take to get to the Proxima Centauri, the place you would have to travel first to get anywhere else? Well, if you want to know more about this, you can get on this website called universetoday.com and look it up, a video with Fraser Cain, which I have yet to look at later on. But seeing how we got our interest in interstellar travel for this show, I just wanted to go over to BTR here real quick and check on the time. We're doing fine on time when we get ready to do another silent break. But before that, we're going to talk about current methods with this theory on how to get to other, not galaxies, but solar systems, rather. The question of how long would it take to get somewhere in space largely is somewhat easier when dealing with existing technology and bodies within our solar system. For instance, using the technology that powered the New Horizons, mission, which consisted of 16 thrusters fueled with hydrazine monopropellant. Reaching the moon would take a mere 8 hours and 35 minutes. With that technology, keeping it in mind. On the other hand, there's the European Space Agency's, or ESA's, SMART-1, Smart 1 mission, which took its time traveling to the moon using the method of ionic propulsion. With this revolutionary technology, a variation of which has since been used by the Dawn spacecraft to reach ESTA, the Smart 1 mission, took 1 year, 1 month, and 2 weeks to reach the moon. So, from the speedy rocket-propelled spacecraft to the economical ion drive, we have a few options. We have very few options, rather, for getting around local space. Plus, we could use Jupiter and Saturn for a hefty gravitational slingshot. However, if we were to contemplate missions to somewhere a little more out of that way, we would have to scale up our technology and look at what's really possible. So how long does it take to get to the moon? There's another video on Universe Today with Fraser Paine. Yeah, Fraser Paine, C-A-I-N. So just look for that name when you're scrolling through the site. It looks like a very interesting site. But I was mentioning something about ionic propulsion. I'm not going to read the rest of the article, or let me check on our time and see if it warrants me to do so. I will try to just explain to what I'm talking about. Actually, we're not going to finish that article. I'm going to let you finish it, and you dig for the answer of that question about how long would it take to travel to the nearest star. Very somewhat interesting question. But I'll let you read the rest of the article, and you decide for yourself. We're going to take a short silent break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up talking about the topics for this show, and salutate with a good ending, and we'll be back. This is Jory Rowe. You're listening to American Psychosis Radio. Welcome back to Open Topic here on American Psychosis Radio with host Jory Rowe. Now, we were talking, and I bet you anything you're probably thinking, a lot of what we talked about tonight was interstellar space travel type topic matter, when the show is basically supposed to be centered around current events, hot topics, news, and random thoughts. But let us leave it to the random thoughts part of the show, and you decide what you think it's worth. You know, I say things and you take it for what it's worth. Basically, that's how it is around here. But we're going to get ready to, we're going to just salutate or just summarize everything what we talked about, and then we will salutate here in a couple of minutes. Now, before the silent break, we were talking about space travel. Let me tell you a little bit about yesterday's space travel. I remember when the space shuttle was going up. You know, just, I remember the very first space shuttle mission in 1980, I believe. Not ever thinking that the shuttle program would last as long as it did, but we are still currently grounded, not flying anything, and we're developing the Orion spacecraft, designed to hold 4 astronauts at a time, designed to go to the International Space Station and dock there, and designed for deep space missions, like from here to the moon and back, or perhaps from here to Mars and back. I guess the first test launch, of the Orion spacecraft was it was unmanned, but the test was, it was conducted to get the inside of the main component of the spacecraft that records everything. They record every vibration, it records every movement, everything. that is said to be needed to be known for human intelligence to travel to deep space destinations, basically. So just keep that in mind that sometime in our lifetime, we will see an Orion rocket go up. But this is Jory Rowe, and we are running out of time for this show today. Hopefully we have no more internet issues that make us have to reschedule the show because we can't do it at the present time because the internet goes down. So when we come back with you next Sunday, we will be doing a show about In Memoriam with me, your host, Jory Rowe. And I'm glad you tuned in and listened to me, and you're leaving everyone else alone. We'll see you next time, right here on Open Topic, right here on American Psychosis Radio with host, me, Jory Rowe. So long for now.